So, for those of you who are here, I think it's been 5 minutes. So, we can, if there's managers, I think it's Leo. Is there, if there's a question that seems pertinent,
So, we haven't gotten any new questions
okay. Well,
about
maybe.
karmic beauty yet, but we've got leftover questions about dharmic pleasure.
Why don't we start with one of them, and then maybe there'll be some other questions that come in now.
So, a couple of questions about dharmic pleasure. How do we distinguish between dharmic pleasure and subtle pleasant imagining? Is that the quality of allowing or emergence?
So I understand that to be imagining is fantasy. And so that would be considered to be coming from outside, kind of. I mean, of course, they're inside of us, but we have, according to Buddhist psychology, there is just like we have sense doors, sense apparatus in the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body. So the mind also has one, and the object of them are our thoughts. So it wouldn't be arising from something deeper. Because it's be arising from the surface stuff of just the thoughts happening, the fantasies happening, and then being stimulated by the pleasure of that, as opposed to something that you can't, for dharmic pleasures, you can't put your finger directly on the source, because it's not like a direct source. It's more indirect from the harmony and the unification that's coming about through the practice. I hope that made sense.
How does the joy of offering metta and the feeling of karuna fit in with the dharmic pleasure? Thank you.
Ah, nice. Well, I think that both those activities of practicing or engaging in karuna and metta, both of them, they can be a practice that we do, an activity we do in our mind. That maybe is a little bit complicated, like using the imagination, for example. Or they can be a flow of feeling that wells up from within. And so when it wells up from within, and sometimes without any good reason, it's just sometimes in meditation, you sit there and just feels like this field of metta or field of karuna, then I think that it's dharmic pleasure. But if it comes from the activity of the mind, thinking about and imagining metta or karuna and reflecting on the, how good it is that I'm doing this wonderful practice, then there can be elements of that which come more from that's more sensual in this funny way that we're using this word. It's more it's more like coming from those thoughts, those ideas that inspire us, that are meaningful for us, that are pleasant for us, but they're not from this deeper wellspring.
How might we work with depression to allow beauty to arise?
Oh, there's all kinds of things which are very hard about being a human being. And depression is one of them. And but it is sometimes possible with mindfulness, for example, to be mindful of the depression, to be mindful of the pain. And the choice about how we're mindful is with the key. Can we be mindful without judgment? Can we be mindful in an accepting way? Can we be mindful in a spacious way? Can we be mindful in a way that just observes and doesn't get involved? And that mindfulness is the activity, the karma, that can start being beautiful or start being pleasant, even. It doesn't change the depression necessarily. And to be involved in trying to fix the depression or make it go away, sometimes meditation can help quite a bit with that. But to depend on that and try to make that happen and measure everything by trying to get rid of the depression might be doing sometimes a disservice when the freedom is found not in getting rid of the depression, but in how we relate to it. And it's that relating to it that where the beauty can be found. And it's also a shift of identification. And if you're going to identify something as being who you are, if we identify the depression as who we are, then it's, you know, much heavier, more difficult to have it. But if we start discovering a different side of ourselves, the side that can observe without reactivity, without judgment, and we make that our identity, who we are, then there's a can we also be start discovering kind of a freedom in the midst of the depression rather than getting rid of it. So I don't know, those ideas work for the person who asked the question, but that's what I have for now.
I'm not sure what this question means, but maybe you might be able to answer it. Since you talked about choice, would looking to the beauty of the alternatives make it easier to choose the right one?
So can you repeat that again?
Since you talked about choice, would looking to the beauty of the alternatives make it easier to choose the right one?
So how I understand that would be, if you're, I can make sense of it is that if you're on a track to do a certain things a certain way, and you know what that is, maybe it's the habitual way, and you take the time to imagine what the alternative is that might be more beautiful, then you might discover a different way to do it than if you didn't do that thought exercise. And so sometimes maybe if, you know, just take some time out. Let me think about this. Let me consider this. Let me reflect on it. And what would be the opposite that's beautiful of yelling at my spouse? And then you maybe, just maybe, you'll find the alternative, a beautiful alternative.
How do we differentiate between karmic beauty and a fleeting positive feeling tone when one comes to our awareness?
Yeah, I think of, I don't know, that's a good question. And probably maybe it's very personal, the answer. So I can just offer a personal response from me, how it is. But I think of pleasure as, for me personally, I think of pleasure as being something that I can be mindful of. Beauty, I can be mindful of, but beauty is a characterizes the mind that's mindful. So with pleasure, there's always kind of a little bit the subject-object distinction. Whereas in beauty, that subject-object distinction doesn't exist so strongly. And so, and with that lack of that distinction, beauty has a feeling of the mind. Mind beauty has a feeling of kind of like clarity and having no boundaries. Whereas pleasure is always a little bit specific.
I'm not sure what this one means, but you might. Does karmic beauty accumulate over lifetimes?
Yes, it can grow. It can. I don't know if it can grow and develop. Yes, and that and accumulate means that it. One of the ways I understand it is that it it builds momentum even underground, under you know, our subconscious, so that it becomes a reservoir. It becomes a orientation, it becomes a tendency, it becomes a disposition that becomes stronger and stronger and then supports us as it accumulates more and more.
Is there a meditation practice to cultivate dharmic pleasure similar to metta meditation or gratitude practice?
The primary one that's usually given is concentration practice. That as the mind gets concentrated, even if you don't want it, that this dharmic pleasure will arise. And in the context of meditation, it's often called piti, the joy or rapture.
This one just came in. Can you share thoughts on how to preserve non-reactivity when one is presented with living, working in situations where others are reacting with fear? It can be challenging to listen to others, practice compassion, but not absorb their feelings / fear.
If the people you're with are good enough friends that you can have a conversation about it or say it out loud, you know, and say, you know, I think I need a, I need, I'd like to, can I have a 30 seconds to pause? This is an intense situation. It's having an impact on me. I'd like to kind of clear my head or my heart a little bit before I respond and do something. Just that pause, just that being to some degree honest about what's happening, might make space and allow you to find a different way of responding. If you don't have that kind of ability, like at work, where you can't be that upfront, there might still be ways of pausing. And the sacred pause where that allows room for wiser responses to come. Is that, do you think, Leo, that answered the question? Or you have the question in front of you, so I don't know if... I mean, you're probably not listening to me because you're reading ahead. So I shouldn't ask you finding questions. Sorry. What's the next one?
Well, we're kind of running out of questions. We're kind of running out of very retreat practice related questions. There's some more philosophical kind of questions coming in. Maybe we could tackle one of those.
Well, let's take one of them, and then we can go back to taking a break before the next sitting.
Okay, so this one was asked twice already today, so we'll ask it. What is a common misconception that quote-unquote Westerners have about karma as defined in Buddhism?
A common misperception that Westerners have about karma. Well, one is that using karma theory to explain why what's happening to us is happening. Like if you get sick, if you're sick, you must have done some bad karma in the past. If anything unfortunate happens, because you did bad karma in the past. And that to that kind of orientation is depressing, not helpful. It's nothing to do with what the Buddha is trying to emphasize when he does karma theory. He's not trying to explain or be critical of why you are the way you are. The karma teaching is about recognizing that today, the choices you make today will have impact in the future. What you might or might have done in the past is irrelevant for this purpose. And so it's really a forward leading and encouraging, inspiring teaching, the teaching of karma, not to be depressed about, you know, what happened in the past, or be held down by it, or use it as one more nail in your coffin, you know, like, oh, I'm so terrible, you know. But rather, given today, where I am now, as I go forward, what would be a good way to go? So it's always forward leading. You know, what are the choices today that I can make that will make a better tomorrow?
If we have time, there's one good question that kind of came in right now at the last minute. Does karmic beauty come naturally, like falling in love? Or does one need to be ready/open to it?
Can it, you know, Leo, can it be both? I keep thinking that you're the one asking the question, so I can ask back. It can be like falling in love, whatever that is. That's a complicated thing. It's probably one of the most complicated things people do, though it feels like it's just natural. But yeah, falling in love, being feeling this beauty within can just arise and just be there as almost like something you can fall in love with yourself or fall in love with your mind. And it's also something that we do. And as we do it, in terms of this accumulation, as we do it regularly, then it starts becoming a more and more a quality of our mind rather than something we have to do anymore. So to use maybe the silly example of walking down the street, if you start cultivating a beautiful way to walk, at first, it takes a little effort and you're focusing on it. But after a while, it just becomes second nature and you even forget that you're walking beautifully, but you are walking beautifully. So in the same way with the mind, at first it's something we have to do and work with, but after a while it becomes second nature and becomes kind of, it's even happening when you're not trying because it's just, that's the orientation of the mind. Well, I hope that my answers are close enough to be satisfying to especially the people who asked. And for those of you who are listening, and it's wonderful to receive the questions and the engagement on these topics. I hope that these topics are evocative for you to give you a different interest in looking at the world and yourself in a different way. And we'll take this break now until 1:45 when we meet again for the next meditation. And thank you very much.